It's my second favorite scene in the movie. What's my favorite? Patience. We're going to get there. Mr. Keating, our teacher, is continuing to challenge the boys to think about things differently. And sometimes that means that we have to begin by seeing things different. Thus, as an object lesson, he climbed upon his desk to look around at a different view. Then he encourages the boys to try it for themselves. I think that's what I like about this movie. Because teaching is not just about talking about, but experiencing together. Even to the point that the boys are going to have to write their own poem. That to me is going to be amusing. Boys writing poetry. Teenage boys writing poetry. I bet that's going to be a fun scene. But it's still not my favorite. But we'll get there. From fake trees to shaped trees to forests to peanuts and peanut butter, this series and the one before it has allowed us to look at things just a little bit differently. Hopefully you've taken the time to look and examine and not just jump off the desk because you think you've seen enough. Better yet, as you've looked, perhaps you are gaining some new perspective on what a growing church really is. Because it's quite different than what we usually think of when we say a growing church. So since we're up here on our desk and we're looking around, how about we cast our view toward a word that we don't like to talk about very much, leadership in the church. And it begins with the law of leadership. The law of leadership says real church growth is led by calling, not celebrity. Now, as I read these law statements, and I read through the book, I got to tell you, most of them made me stop and think. I had to pause for a moment when it said that the church is powered by the gospel and not relevance. Some of them, as I thought about them, I didn't like. I'm still trying to lick my wounds over the fact that worship is not supposed to be the focus of the church. It's supposed to be mission. Some of them flat out energized me. If you saw me buzzing around here last week, you knew I could not wait to get up here and preach that sermon because we talked about unity, which is a great part and an important part of church. But this one, it flat out makes me uncomfortable because I do consider myself a leader in the church, and I don't consider myself in any way, shape, or form a celebrity at anything I did. I even went so far as to begin thinking that when I looked at my calendar, if this sermon series has to be cut to 6 because we got an early snow or the calendar, this is the sermon I'm throwing out the door. After all, we're talking about leadership. This is the week that a lot of people think, oh, that's the topic today, so I think I'm not a leader in the church, so I get the week off, and so, I don't know, maybe that's the point you say, I could take a nap on this one. I encourage you not to go to sleep on this. Because as I began thinking about this sermon, I came up with 3 really good reasons that you want to hear this particular sermon. First, we want to make sure that we, as we put leaders in place, that those leaders have a calling to the ministry they have been put in place to lead. We need warm hearts, not warm bodies. Second, it is an absolute known fact that there is a shortage of leaders in the church. And it isn't just this church. You can go from church to church to church. Everybody's asking the same question. Where are the leaders, especially when it comes to the title of minister, preacher, pastor, whatever you want to call them? Could it be that the reason that we are struggling to find leaders in our church is we don't understand the nature of called leadership, thus leading to our shortage? It means that we, the church, have adopted worldly human resource models and practices for hiring our minister and even putting in place other church leaders. I have a shock for you. Go ahead and start at Genesis and read all the way to Revelation. You know one word you won't find in the entire Bible? Vote. Because they didn't vote. They cast lots sometimes, but that usually didn't end in the well for the person they had received a lot. Leaders were never voted in place anywhere in the Bible. They were called. Okay? So maybe this sermon will give you a little perspective of what called leadership is. But there's a third and the most important reason that I think we need to talk about this. Because there could be people that God is calling. But since we fail to discuss the idea, then they never actually hear the call. Maybe you are one of those people. And this sermon will encourage you to put your ear to the wind and listen. Or maybe more importantly, to bend your knee and say, here I am. And I guess if we're going to talk about this, the first thing I better do is I better define this word call, right? And I was going to do the Barry thing. Y'all know what the Barry thing is. When I have to define something, where do I usually go? The dictionary, right? That's what that book is designed to do, is define words. And that's where I went, and I ran into my very first problem. Depending on which version of the dictionary you pick up, there are between 17 and 23 definitions of the word call. That's not helpful. That's not. We could do everything from calling a play to calling a square dance to calling somebody on the phone. It could mean anything. There are all kind of words for that definitions for that word call. Even less helpful, as I read through all of those definitions, some of them kind of swiped at the edge of what it means to be called as a leader, but none of them hit the nail right on the head. So when we start talking about defining calling, maybe the real issue is that we don't understand how to hear a call, right? I can remember when I was a kid and I was out playing in the neighborhood, and when it was time for dinner, my mom used to stand at the back door, and for such a small woman, man, she had a good set of lungs. Because you know what? She could yell dinner time, and the expectation was that I could hear her calling me to come home for dinner. The thing is, I got to define hearing the call, and the only person I can talk about is my calling. Because everybody kind of has a little bit different. And I get asked this. I've been asked this a number of times in my life. How did I know I was called to do this? It's simple. Here's the way it worked. I sent a resume. Dean called me on the phone and offered me an opportunity to try out for the job. Therefore, see, obviously, I was called, right? That's a terrible joke. See, I can't possibly be a celebrity because I can't deliver a good joke to save me. But you do understand that's not what calling is. Matter of fact, the story is much bigger than that. And I don't have time to go into it in full today, but if you'd like to hear it sometime, pack a lunch and come talk to me because it takes a while for me to go through this. Maybe the best thing I can do when I begin talking about calling is talk about what calling was not for me. I did not have a Samuel moment where God woke me up from my sleep and said, you have a mission to do, go do it. I did not have a burning bush moment. There was no moment that God called me off to the side and said, go do this. And that's mainly because God knew Barry and fire, not a good idea. See, I can't deliver a joke. I can't get a chuckle. That's just how it works. Nobody came knocking on my door with a bottle of anointing oil and said, hey, have I got a job for you? And really, although we tried really hard to make it into this, it wasn't even a pull your boat up on the shore, leave everything behind, and accept a calling. And in case you're wondering, I did not have a road to Damascus moment where God called me, and I did not go into this kicking and screaming. I had none of that. And that's an interesting question. So if I had none of those, how do I know this is what God wanted me to do? And I got to tell you, I've heard other people's stories about how they came into ministry, and I envy people that have those calling moments, that clear, concise moment where God said, this is what I want you to do with your life. For me, it was kind of a slow burn over time. One event led to another event, which led to another event, which led to another event, until I was standing there at the doorstep, and God's like, so what are you going to do now? Okay, I guess I'm going into ministry. It wasn't part of the plan, but okay, I guess we'll do this because it looks like this is where you've herded me or corralled me. This is where you've got me going. Thus, I do not have a defining calling moment, but my experience, I can hopefully help you in knowing this. If perhaps God is calling you into some form of ministry, you just need to start listening. Now, this is not just a sermon for pastors, elders, or deacons. Okay, maybe deacons. Someday we'll have to have a big sermon to talk about what is a deacon in the church, because right now we kind of have the wrong definition. But that's another sermon for another day. So since I can't really give you a concrete definition of called, I thought maybe my sermon today should just be a healthy look into called leadership. And it starts where all seems like every sermon that's going to talk about church leadership starts. It starts in 1 Timothy chapter 3, and that's where we have all those qualifications listed for elders and deacons and all. That's where we have that. But I'm only interested in one verse there. It's the first verse. Because if you're going to be called, you have to have this one. Here is a trustworthy saying. Whoever aspires to be an overseer desires a noble task. And now I'm thinking, great, not only do I have to be a celebrity, now I have to be nobility. Again, I'm no good at the jokes. See, it doesn't work. But what I do know is aspire, because now I can use my dictionary. Aspire is direct one's hopes and ambitions towards achieving something. Okay? And when I look at the word desire, it means a strong feeling or wanting to have something or wish for something to happen. So you can go all the way down through all of those qualifications, all the things that they say an elder is supposed to be and a deacon is supposed to be. And here's the thing. I don't care if you meet every single one of those to a T. If you don't have these two, don't do it. If you don't want to lead, then don't raise your hand to be a leader. It's really that simple. If it's not in something that just your heart throbs for it, then don't do it. And I've heard it. I've been in church almost my entire life, and I hear leaders and people that are in charge of ministries, and this is their reason for doing what they're doing. If nobody else does it, then if I don't do it, nobody else will do it. That is a sad way to go into ministry, folks. And that is not calling. The void of leadership does not mean that people are just supposed to step into leadership. Because the thing is, if you really don't want to do it, then what you're going to do is you're not going to be a leader. You're going to be a manager. And management looks much different. Because it looks different when it comes to your focus. Because leadership zeroes in on why and what. While management asks the question of how. See, if I'm just managing, I'm just trying to figure out how to get the pieces moving. If I'm leading, I'm asking, why are we doing this? I'm asking, what are we doing? Sometimes they even ask you, where are we going? If your drive for answering your question is just, how do we do this? Then understand, you're managing. You're not leading. Leaders set the course and direction. Managers execute and implement the plans to get there. Leaders look out there and they say, okay, that's where I'm headed. That's where I'm going. All I have to do is figure out how to get everybody on board to go where I'm going. I'm leading. This is where we're going. Managers wait to get the instructions and they start figuring out how to implement it one piece at a time. When it comes to management, by the way, this is taken right out of a management book, not out of the Bible, not out of a dictionary, right out of a management book. When it comes to managers, leaders take a long-term perspective, whereas managers concentrate on short-term objectives. If I'm leading, I'm looking down the field to tomorrow. If I'm managing, I'm how do I get through today? If I'm leading, I've got a five-year plan. If I'm managing, I'm lucky if I've got a six-month purpose. There's a huge difference. And unfortunately, I think a lot of times we get into the idea of management because when it comes to management, even in the way that we do things, innovation and efficiency, leadership fosters creativity, encourages new ideas. In contrast, management prioritizes efficiency and streamlining, operating and relying on old methods, experience, and numbers. Okay. This management thing sounds like it might be a needed thing. We've got to have good managers, but it's not a leader thing. Because even when it comes to people, leaders and managers have a different focus. Leaders inspire to motivate their teams. Managers, on the other hand, are more concerned with coordination and organization. Start thinking about that. If you're just here to manage the project, and by the way, I am a project manager in my other life. If I'm just there to manage the project, my goal is just to get the project complete. I really don't care that much about all the people that are on my team, because guess what? When that project is done, then the people that are on my team are going to go somewhere else, and they're going to be part of somebody else's team, and I'm going to get another project, and I have to reassemble a team. You get the difference here. There are important differences. Because while managers are important and necessary, I'm not discounting how much we need people that get behind the nuts and bolts and the process. Here's the thing. God never calls managers. He calls leaders. There's a difference. If you've been called to manage, then you probably answer the help wanted ad. You saw something in the bulletin, you saw a need, and you just want to step in because you're trying to make things work for some reason. And while we're on the topic, called leadership always leads to teamwork, never a committee. You know my famous quote, right? Learned it when I was a kid. Anything with no head is dead, and anything with two heads is a monster. Unfortunately, in most churches, we have a few too many headless horsemen and way too many monsters. See, anything that is being led by committee is not being led. It is being managed. See point number one. We're going to head down that point. Now, when I say this, it does not mean that you get to go it alone. I'm the leader. I'm in charge. I get to call all the shots, because I love this quote taken right out of the Future Church book. Faced with the size and scope of the project, Jesus refuses to be a solo minister. Now, you know what that means, right? What was Jesus' priority one? He called 12 individuals to be the core leadership team. It was not a committee. Okay? Nobody came to Jesus and said, hey, I'm not really sure about the Samaria thing. Why don't we stop and let's take a vote? No. Jesus said, hey, I'm going to Samaria. I have need to be there. Hey, team, come along with me. Jesus called the 12 disciples to him and gave them authority. Now, notice what happens. In the team, Jesus is giving them the authority to become leaders, to drive out impure spirits and deal with every illness, every start, disease, and sickness. He called 12. One decided the position was not for him. He left for a better opportunity, decided it was a dead-end job. But see, I'm no good at jokes. I can't be a celebrity, right? I'm no good at jokes. They're corny. They're worse than dad jokes, right? They're horrible. But here is the thing. Jesus, God in flesh, did not take on the task alone. What on earth, for a second, makes me think that an average or even an above average human being could lead a church by themselves? It can't be done. That's why I like the word teamwork, because committees, they do what is popular. Teams do what is needed. I'm reminded of those days in August when I was playing football, when I actually thought I was going to be able to play football, but I didn't grow big enough, and I'm not fast enough. But I do remember the coach at the end of the practice making us run up and down that hill in the hot August weather, where you ran all the way up the hill, you had to touch the fence, you had to run on, and you had to do it 10 times. Did he ask me? No, he didn't ask me. He didn't take a vote of all the players. Like, who wants to run the hill today? Because I'll tell you how many people would have voted. He'd have been by himself, because he was probably the only one that wanted to see the hill ran that day. But he knew that we were going to need some endurance, so he was doing what was needed. When it comes to teams, teams always have great leaders, don't they? Go ahead, pick your favorite sports team. I'm betting you can name the people that are the leaders of the team. If you don't have great leaders on your team, then you're going to end up being a committee, not a team. Teams also encourage teamwork. That's important. Teams are not about you. You come be on my team, and I tell you how to do it, and you do it my way, and I cross all the T's, dot all the I's, and you do it my way, or it's the highway. Teams encourage teamwork, right? Could you imagine the person that tries to play every position on a softball field at the same time? I've watched that before when my son was like 5, and I called it kitten ball, because everywhere the ball went, that's where the whole team went. The problem is then there's nobody to cover first base, and it's just chaos. Fun to watch when you're watching your kids. Frustrating to coach because you're trying to get the kids to go in the right direction all the time. And teams, this is important, they also work hard to develop new team members and future leaders. I want to send some cold chills up your spine. You realize we may be sitting here in a few years, and we may be talking about Elder Damien. Ooh. Maybe we're talking about Deacon Trey and Wade. Maybe we're talking about worship leader Ava. Maybe we're talking about children's minister Ana Russo. Maybe we're talking Aaliyah as a ladies' ministry leader. I hope you like to play softball because she really loves it, okay? You get it, right? At some point, they're going to be our leaders. And before that gives you too many cold chills, if you travel down to Lynchburg to where I grew up and you walk into the church and say, hey, guess who our pastor's name is? Barry Creasy. They're like, are you crazy? We remember that kid when he was little. He was a terror. You get it, right? Maybe the reason that we can never find our future leaders is because we don't spend enough time developing them in a team concept. Food for thought, isn't it? It's important because it's a very fine balance. If you think leadership is about barking out orders and people doing everything your way, then I'm going to just go ahead and tell you, I'm going to solve your issue for you. God hasn't called you into leadership. That's not leadership. However, if you can't accept responsibility to lead and leadership is just meetings, discussing issues, planning events, then odds are you have some growing to do before God's going to call you into leadership. Because I know what called leadership is. Called leadership is about responsibility, accountability, and action. Because this is what leaders do. They're responsible for casting the vision. They're accountable for when it doesn't go right. And they take action to correct the course. That is called leadership. So there's one more kind of leadership that I want to make sure I take out of the equation because we confuse this one a lot. Dictators and leaders, called leaders are open-minded folks. If in your church leadership you have people that decide first, then make their argument, and understand they're not leaders. They are dictators because that's not called leadership. And even more so than managers or committees, I just want to go ahead and tell you, they are detrimental to mission because dictators like to keep things status quo and comfortable for themselves. They are not open to change and do not consider the good of the body. Think about it. Every dictator in history, what was their interest? Keeping themselves in power. To keep myself in power, I cannot let things change too much. Otherwise, I will lose power. That's a dictator mentality, folks. And I'm just going to be extremely blunt in the fact. Peter says there's only one dictator in the church. He had a very specific name. To the elders among you, I appeal to you as fellow elders. Interesting. Peter never considered himself in charge of the church. He considered himself just a member of the team, a fellow elder and a witness of Christ's suffering who will share in the glory to be revealed, be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care, watching over them, not because you must, not because they couldn't find anybody else to do the job, but because you are willing, there's our words, aspire and desire, as God wants you to be, not pursuing dishonest gain, but eager to serve, not lording it over those who entrusted you, but being examples to them, the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that will never fade away. Anybody want to give me the name of the chief shepherd? It's Jesus. He's the only one that gets to make a dictator decision here. He's the one that needs to be listened to when he says, this is the way we do it. That's the way we do it. We don't ask questions because this is his church. See, in my personal experience, in a dictator mindset, you're going to lead narrow. And eventually, you know what you're going to start doing? You're going to start dictating things to God. Well, yeah, that's right. I know what the Bible says, but you know what? I'm just going to go this way because this is the way we've always done it. No. And don't tell me we don't do it. We have to be careful about this. Woe be unto us if we decide saying this is the way we're going because this is what I think, even if the Bible doesn't think what I think. If I don't think the way the Bible thinks, guess who needs to change their mind? Me. So now that I have successfully irritated a lot of people that call themselves leaders, either listening or not, I think that we should take a look at the nature of what real called leadership is. And this was an important verse to me in what I'm doing today because I struggled with this idea of calling. See, John chapter 10, verses 12 through 13, Jesus is teaching the lesson. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. So in our analogy here, I want to make sure I say it very clearly. The hired hand is the celebrity. Dictator, manager, committee, understand, hired hands play a part. But it's also a career path. Hired hands are going to be looking for the next opportunity. The next big moment. The next title, the next ministry, the next church, the next location. They are a short-term answer to our leadership void. Because hired hands ultimately are in it for self. Whether it be to earn a paycheck, get some fame, receive some praise, simply to be in charge, or even to make sure things never change, they're doing it for self. Isn't that what the hired hand is? In my other life, they do pay me a paycheck, and if they don't pay me my other paycheck, then odds are I'm not coming back in next week. When it comes to this church, okay, I do receive a salary. Would I do this without pay? I've done that for about 17 years before I came here. So I understand. Yes. If it wasn't to the point that the church could not pay me, you would probably still have to deal with my terrible jokes. Because I feel I've been called here. I didn't show up here just because you posted a help wanted sign. Hired hands have no ownership, thus they take no responsibility. Yeah, we got a joke about this morning because when we got to donuts, somebody was complaining all the chocolate donuts were gone, and when they said something to me, I blamed my son. It's his fault, he should have got you one early. Understand, that's past the buck, and that's what we do. If you're not the leader, then when things come to you, you're willing to pass them on. Not my fault, so-and-so did this. Or not my fault, so... No. Everything is the leader's fault. Okay? The buck stops with the leader. Because even if you didn't make it go right, then you know what? You have an obligation to make it go better in the future. Everything is the leader's fault. Because they are responsible. You're not just hired to do a job. You're called to lead. And that means sometimes you're just going to have to step up and say, my decision, I'm going to make it, and if I'm wrong, God forbid. Here's the big tell, though. You want to know whether you got yourself a hired hand or you got yourself a leader? The hired hand quits during adversity. Things get tough. Things get complicated. People start complaining. I'm going to take my ball and go home. I'm going to find somewhere else to be because you know what? This is not what I signed up for. I signed up for Disney World, the happiest place on earth, and this ain't making me happy right now. That's not leadership, folks. That means you got hired on to do a job, and you're doing the job, and now you're not getting enough benefit out of the job, and so you're going to go find yourself another job. Whether it be you find yourself another ministry in the church, maybe you go find yourself another church. Maybe you find yourself, you know what, I don't need a church at all because this just ain't worth it. You get the difference, right? Hired hands don't stick it out during the hard times. When the going gets tough, they start running. You want to know what a leader looks like? When the going gets tough, they stand firm. And you know what? Jesus had a name for that he called a career name for a leader. He called him a shepherd. Now, make no mistake about it. When it comes to the flock, the shepherd's in charge. Okay? You can name other people in charge. You can say, this is what I... Whoever is the shepherd, they are the ones that are going to be in charge of the direction of the flock. And please note, it's not shepherding by committee. Even when you have a fantastic team, there is always going to be the one that says, the ball's in the middle of the court, I'm going to take the ball, and we're going to go. That's the shepherd. They will always be in charge, even when they're not. They'll still be in charge. Here's the other thing. They have a relationship with the sheep. Yep. They know their sheep. And they know what their sheep are up to. And they know what's going on in the life of their sheep. And the sheep know them. And I didn't say it was always a good relationship. Okay? Sometimes a shepherd and a sheep can have some very bad relationship, because when the sheep isn't going where it's supposed to go and it's constantly wandering off the path, guess how the shepherd fixes the problem? That rod and that staff, the other end of that staff, that blunt end, well, the crook was used to yank them back on, and the back part of that rod was used to break the sheep's leg, creating a dependency on the leader. So it's not always a good relationship. Sometimes there are some hard moments, and this is where the shepherd says, I have to make the hard choice, because that's called leadership. Because I had the best interest at heart for the sheep, not for the shepherd. I got a feeling that many times shepherds have to take moments that they sit there and they agonize over. But they know they have to do, because I like Jesus' word, because they care. I used to tell my teenagers this when I was a youth minister. If you want me to care about your life, get ready, because I'm going to start caring about your life. And I'm not talking about just coming to your ball games. I'm talking about when your life falls apart or when you're heading the wrong direction. I'm going to care. Sheep are not their job. They did not just get hired. Sheep are their investment. That's huge. Nobody gets hired to be a shepherd. How do you know you're a shepherd? Come on, this is an easy question. You have sheep, right? If you are a shepherd, then you have a sheep. If you're a shepherd with no sheep, then you know what you're not. You're not a shepherd. As a matter of fact, a shepherd with no sheep is just a shepherd that decided to stop being a shepherd. There's no such thing as an unemployed shepherd. It means you've just decided you no longer want to be a shepherd, and you've gone somewhere else to do something else for your career. A shepherd does not drive the herd. They lead the flock. Go look at all the pictures. Where's the shepherd? In front of the flock leading. He isn't behind the flock going, shoo, shoo, go, get. You know why? I've dealt with sheep. That's madness. You think herding kittens is bad? Try herding sheep. Sheep have to be led, which means you have to earn their trust, which means you have to get down in the trenches with them, and they need to see you every single day and every single moment. And eventually, you know what happens? I gave this book out when I got here. You start smelling like your sheep. That's a shepherd's life. They smell like they're sheep, because they're not just in charge. They're in front. They're the ones out there saying, wolf, if you want this flock over my dead body, shall you have them. You might get them, but you're going to have to take me with them. That's a called leader. A called leader is one that goes through thick and thin, and they refuse to quit. Not because they're some kind of egomaniac, but because they understand, I was called. See, it's a huge responsibility because not only are they constantly being looking forward toward where they're going, but at the same time they have to make sure the sheep are not wandering. That's called leadership, folks. You're looking toward tomorrow while looking back and making sure you're not losing the sheep as you're going. That's called leadership. It can't be dictated. It can't be managed. It can't be done by votes and committee. It's got to be done by God's called leaders in the church. Because long and short of all of this, God does not hang out a help wanted sign. He said, leaders, come follow. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. I'm going to ask the worship team to join me back up here. And as they're coming, I want to ask you something. Are you called? Understand, each of us have calling. If you accepted Christ as your personal, you receive a call. But when it comes to this leadership thing, are we called? You are called to lead others to Christ. You don't get out of that one. But if God is calling you today, I encourage you. Just stop for a moment and say, okay, God, what next? It may not be the path that you think it is, okay? But I do encourage you to examine our leadership, all of our leadership in the church. Pray for them as we're going to pray for the election today on Monday. And make sure that you're holding them accountable to be responsible for the shepherding of our flock. Because that's what called leadership signed up for.